Hare Krishna. In this seventh chapter, knowledge of the Absolute, we have seen that in the first three verses, Lord Krishna has explained that he can be known by hearing about him. The importance of the process of Shravanam, hearing, has been mentioned. The next section of the 7th chapter, verses 4 to 12, Krishna has described his material and spiritual energies, and he has explained through various examples that not only is he the source of everything, not only is he the cause of destruction of everything, not only is he the one who maintains everything, but he is also the essential principle. He is the active principle. He is the essence of everything. And to this end, he has given many, many examples. Last time, in text 11, we saw how Krishna has explained that he is the strength of the strong, but only that strength which is kama raga vivarjitam balam balavatam chaham. So I am the strength of the strong, but I am only that strength that is not used in anger, for ego, for some selfish purpose. He is not that kind of strength. He is the strength that is used for the upliftment of dharma in accordance with the principles of religion. When strength is used, then that is me, Krishna says. As we discussed last time, of course, Krishna is even the strength of those who use that strength irreligiously. But nevertheless, then Krishna is not responsible for that. Krishna is not involved in that. His material energy will take care of that person who will get the strong reactions to his sinful activities. But for a person who is using his shakti, strength, that is given by God, in the right way according to Lord Krishna's instructions, then Krishna becomes involved in his life personally. Because now he is using it according to his instruction. Similarly, he also says, dharmaha aviruddhaha bhuteshu kamaha asmi bharatarshabha. Bharatarshabha, the best among the dynasty of Bharat. I am also that sex life which is not contrary to the principles of religion. So that sex which is according to dharma, that is within marriage for the sake of procreation of God-conscious children, that I am. But any other form, I am not involved with that. There will be reactions for that, for which the performer will have to bear the reactions. So having explained these various examples, now in text 12, he will be concluding this particular section where he explains that he is the essence of everything. So let us briefly discuss text 12.
Ye chaiva sattvika bhava rajasastamasascha ye matta eveti tan viddhi na tvaham teshu te mayi.
Srila Prabhupada, know that all states of being, be they of goodness, passion or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. I am, in one sense, everything. But I am independent. I am not under the modes of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. So in this verse, Krishna is summarizing the previous verses, and with this verse the second section of the seventh chapter has ended, and Lord Krishna is mentioning here the three modes of material nature. I am sure that all of you are aware of this concept. Even those of you who are coming recently, you must be knowing that this material nature is constituted of three gunas. Guna means quality, And this nature has three qualities, sattva, rajas, tamas. And everything that goes on in this world is basically a combination of these three gunas. Just as there are three primary colors, red, blue and yellow, and all the colors that we see in the creation is simply by a combination of these different colors. So we can say, for example, that as far as colors is concerned, everything is red, yellow and blue. So similarly, in this material nature, all forms of prakriti or nature are simply various permutations and combinations of sattva, rajas, tamas. Just as blue, red and yellow, or each of these colors has its own characteristic. Similarly, each guna, sattva, rajas, tamas, also has its own characteristic. For example, sattva encourages cultivation of wisdom, it encourages austerities, it encourages good behavior or sadachar, it encourages faith in the scriptures, faith in holy people, it encourages some degree of renunciation, it encourages a feeling of happiness in being pious. So sattva guna is for one who is pious. So if somebody is influenced by that mode according to his previous karma, then he will behave in this way. Rajas, the mode of passion, is indicated by a very intense hankering for material pleasures, hankering for money, for name, fame, prestige, for all these things. And a person who is under this mode is always struggling for more and more. He is never satisfied, never peaceful. Unlike the person in sattva guna, who is somewhat satisfied with what his destiny brings him. He is not greedy, and somehow he is satisfied with his lot, with what his destiny brings for him. But the rajaguna person is extremely active and restless in trying to enjoy this world more and more and more. He's never satisfied. Therefore, his mind is always disturbed. Then there is tamaguna, the mode of ignorance. A person who is under the influence of this mode is always, as the term indicates, in ignorance. He is totally devoid of an understanding of the proper way of living. He is lazy, unclean, given to many bad habits, say different forms of intoxication, and generally he has no appreciation for anything that is cultured or anything that is of a higher level. Now I am sure that all of us have observed people who will fall under these categories, and you will also agree that there is no hard and fast, it is not cut and dry. It is not that somebody is totally 100% sattvic, somebody is 100% rajasic, somebody is 100% tamasic. No, these modes come in mixtures. Somebody may be very largely sattvic, but he will have mixture of raja and tama also. Somebody may be largely tamasic, but he may have some mixture of raja. Somebody may be largely rajasic, but he may have mixture of sattva and tama. So in this way, all the three gunas combine in various ways to create this whole material world. Everything is classified according to the three gunas, even the places, the quiet countryside with its beautiful scenic forests and other things is in sattva guna. When you go to such places, immediately you feel calm, you feel peaceful. If you come to the crowded city where all these glittering signs in the shops which are attracting you, so many hotels and so many other things, people dressing to attract everybody else. So this is rajaguna. So people become very passionate for material enjoyment. And when one stays in such an environment, automatically one becomes very attracted, one becomes very affected by that environment. Even a sattvic person, if he stays long in a rajasic environment, will become rajasic by sangha, by association. And then there is tamasic. Tamasic means places of intoxication, prostitution, such places which are deep in ignorance. So such places, if one goes, even a sattvic person goes, by regularly going, he will also get affected. Then even foodstuffs are in these three modes. The animals, they are in tamoguna. The human beings are in rajaguna, relatively speaking, of course. The devas in swargaloka are in sattvaguna. Even among the humans who are relatively in rajaguna compared to the devas and the animals, even amongst the humans there are those who are sattvic relatively, those who are relatively rajasic, those who are relatively tamasic. So it's a very complex situation. The three modes of nature are very, very difficult to understand, difficult to comprehend how they work. So everything in this world is governed by these three modes. Everyone is under the clutches of these three gunas. I mentioned earlier that one of the meanings of the word guna is quality. And these gunas are the three qualities of material nature. But there is another meaning also to the word guna. And that is that it is a rope. It is a rope that binds the souls of this world to this cycle of birth and death. It is the gunas that keeps the conditioned souls in this world in the cycle of birth and death, keeps them away from realizing their spiritual position. So here Lord Krishna is saying, ye cha eva sattvika bhava rajasas tamasas cha ye. He is saying all these bhavas, all these natures, goodness, passion, ignorance, sattva, rajas, tamas, matta eva iti, they all come from me. They are originating in me, they emanate from me. For example, sattva. A person in sattva, like a demigod, for example, a deva of swarga, they have sense control. A person in raja, for example, the asuras, they are characterized by lust and greed and so on. And then those in tama, like the rakshasas, for example, always in lamentation, always in illusion. Now all these natures, Lord Krishna is explaining here, they all emanate from me. They depend on me. So please know, my dear Arjuna, he says, tan vidhi, na tu aham teshu te mayi. You should know that I am not in them, but they are in me. They are in me, teshu te mayi means that they depend on me. That they are coming from me, they emanate from me. So Krishna is a master of the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. Mayadhyakshena prakritihi suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. Lord Krishna explains, mayadhyakshena prakritihi. This prakriti is going on according to my instruction. This sattva, rajas, tamas, these things are happening under my instruction. It is not happening independently. And Krishna is not under the influence of this, as we will see in the next verse. So having explained this, now Krishna is summarizing and saying that everything is under his control. Even the three gunas are under his control, and it is the three gunas which actually control everything in this world. So even those three things that control everything in this world are themselves controlled by Krishna. So teshu te mayi. And at this level he ends his discussion of the para and apara shaktis and begins to describe the inconceivable relation that he has between him and his energies. And that relationship is that the energies emanate from him, but although they depend on him, he is not affected or influenced by that. In the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, yatha kasha sthito nityam vayu sarvatra go mahan tatha sarvani bhutani matsthani tyupadharaya. He says, yatha, just as akasha sthitah vayu sarvatra go mahan, the vayu or the air, which is sarvatra gaha, which is always blowing everywhere, mahan, which is very great, akasha sthita, it is situated in the sky. We may think that the air is everywhere, but the sky is much more vast. The sky is unimaginably vast. And the air is resting in the sky. Similarly, he says, tatha sarvani bhutani matsthani upadharaya. Upadharaya, please understand, my dear Arjuna. That just as the wind, the breezes, air is resting on the sky, which is much more vast. Similarly, sarvani bhutani, all the living entities, all this creation, is resting in me, matsthani iti. So everything is resting in me. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina. Matsthani sarva bhutani na teshu chapyaham. He says that although I am the cause of everything, everything I am pervading everywhere, and although I am in everything and everything is in me, but I am still aloof from my creation. I am not involved in that. I am not implicated in that. I am not controlled by my own energy. I am independent. I am the master of these three modes. In this way, Lord Krishna is trying to describe how basically he is relating to his energies. This relationship between him and his energies is being described here. Just as a king is a supreme authority in the kingdom. The king makes laws, but he is not bound himself by those laws. Those laws are meant for the praja. Similarly, the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, he has made all these laws for us. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma or religion means the will of God, the rules as laid down by God. So the Lord himself is not bound by the laws that he makes for humanity. And in this way, Lord Krishna is describing over here that these modes are very much under his control, but he says there are many people who don't understand this point. And therefore now, in the next verse, text 13, he is going to elaborate on this some more, because the question arises that if Krishna is everywhere, he is the essence of everything, everything is resting on him, etc., then why is it that we cannot see him everywhere, we cannot know him everywhere? Why is it that people do not see him and know him and surrender to him? In answer to this question, now Krishna will speak the next two verses, texts 13 and 14. So this forms the next section of chapter 7, where Krishna will now describe why it is that even though he is everywhere, but people cannot see him, people cannot know him. Normally, if someone is everywhere, you should be able to see him. Suppose there is somebody in the office, you say, I did not see you in the office, I was there. If you were there, I should have seen you. That means you were not there. So if somebody is there, we must see. But Krishna is everywhere, he is in every atom. So why don't we see him? That answer is given in text 13 and 14. Text 13.
Tribhir gunamair bhavai. Ebhi sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabhijanati mam ebhyah paramavyayam. Tribhir gunamair bhavair ebhi sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabhijanati mam ebhyah paramavyayam. Tribhir gunamair bhavair ebhi sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabhijanati mam ebhyah param avyayam.
This is a very important shloka, so kindly hear the translation carefully. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. Krishna has now given the answer. Even though Krishna is everywhere, he is the source of everything, the destruction of everything, the maintainer of everything, the origin, he is the essence of everything, he is everywhere, but people still cannot see him and know him because of these three modes of material nature. Because everyone is deluded. Deluded means bewildered, under the spell, as if of some magician's spell, as if hypnotized. Their eyes are covered. Elsewhere also in the Gita, Lord Krishna says, Naham prakashah sarvasya yoga maya samavratah moodhoyam nabhijanati mam ebhyah param avyayam. He says, people cannot see me, know me, understand me, because such foolish people, their eyes, moodha, their eyes has been covered by the curtain of maya. Yoga maya samavratah. Avratah means to cover. Na aham prakashah sarvasya, therefore I cannot be seen by everyone. Although I am avyaya, I am imperishable, I am indestructible, I am eternal, but people cannot see me because of my magic spell of maya. Maya means the influence of the three modes of material nature. It is these three modes of material nature that are enchanting everyone. Just like sometimes you may have seen, there are these people who come carrying some snakes with them in a basket, and then they will play that musical instrument. Have you all seen that? And then when he does, the snake is mesmerized by that. Although the nature of the snake is to bite, but now the snake will be swaying to that tune, the melody that he's playing is totally captured by that musical instrument. In this way, maya is enchanting. The three modes of material nature are enchanting everyone. And everyone is under the spell of this, totally under the clutches, controlled, 100% controlled by the three modes. There is independence, but still no independence. There is independence in the sense that we have freedom to desire. But because these modes are so strong, so even though we desire to do something, because of the spell of maya, we are forced to do something else. This is the nature. Just like a person haunted by a ghost, now he acts very differently. It is not in his control to act in a certain way. So in the same way, the three modes, they act upon the living entities and they behave as if they are haunted. Actually, the very basic teaching of the Bhagavad Gita is that we are spiritual living entities. We have nothing to do with these three modes of material nature, sattva, rajas, tamas. We are meant to be in the spiritual world, not in the material world. But somehow we have come here. And having come here, we have got caught by this trap of maya, of the three modes of material nature. And because of this spell, we cannot understand who we are, what is this world, what is the nature of this happiness and suffering of this world. We cannot understand who is the creator of these modes, and we cannot understand that there is a God, and what is the nature of this God. We cannot understand that God is not under the clutches of the three modes. He is the master of the three modes of nature. He is never under the three modes of nature. So here it is being explained, Tribhir Gunamai Bhaveir. So this jagat, this bhautik jagat, the material world, is called Gunamai, Trigunamai. Gunamai means it is full of the three modes. There is nothing but the three modes in this material world. Tribhir, the three modes, Gunamayir Bhave, Ebhihi Sarvam Idam Jagat. So all over the universe, these three modes are reigning supreme. And because of that, what is happening? Krishna says, Mohitam. Mohitam means that everyone is bewildered. All people in this world are becoming totally bewildered because of the three modes of material nature. According to how these three modes act on the living entities, they behave differently and are called by different names. In our Vedic Shastra, we have the Varnashtama Dharma, where you have Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Now there is a wrong impression in the minds of people that this Varnashrama Dharma is like the caste system, where if somebody is born in a Brahmin family, then he becomes a Brahmana. That is not so. Actually, who is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra? That is understood by how the three modes of nature are acting on that person. If there is someone totally under Sattva Guna, he is called a Brahmana. If there is someone who is predominantly under Rajaguna, he is called a Kshatriya. If there is somebody under combination of Rajaguna and Tamaguna, he is called a Vaishya. If there is somebody under control of tamaguna, he is called a shudra. And there are those who are even lower than that. So the three modes of nature, material nature, act upon different people in different ways and give them certain qualities. That is why a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, each has his own quality of action, the way of thinking. But ultimately, all these things are temporary designations. When we have this particular body of a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, Indian, Russian, American, male, female, engineer, doctor, we think, yes, I am such and such. And then when death comes, this body is destroyed. We have to give up this body. Then we have another body in which we acquire a new identity. We forget our old identity. And in this way, our forgetfulness continues. We continue to remain under the clutches of the three modes of material nature. Only our false identities keep on changing. That is the only thing that happens. So actually, this whole cycle, which is called samsmriti, is happening because of our desires. The subtle body, the sukshma sharira, which transfers the soul from this gross body to another gross body at the time of death, is a storehouse of many, many desires. Insurmountable desires, unlimited desires are there in the heart. It is only when one tries to check one's desires and control the mind and senses that one begins to understand how many desires we have in the heart and how deep-rooted these are. So long as we don't attempt to control the mind and the senses, we are not even aware to what extent we are under their control. So these desires are actually the cause of our next body. According to the kind of desires we have at the time of death, we get another body. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavitah. Lord Krishna says, whatever state of consciousness we develop at the time of death, exactly that state we will create. So according to our mental state, which is made up of our desires, we will get the next body. We will get a gross body made of flesh and blood. In this flesh and blood, because of those desires and those samskaras, we will act accordingly. That will change our subtle body in that way. We will get another gross body. In this way, we go on getting more and more gross bodies of different natures. Sometimes we will become a devata, sometimes a human being, sometimes an asura, sometimes an animal or a bird or a plant or an insect. We all have gone through this experience. We all have traveled through these 84 lakh species of life. The demigods are usually in sattva-guna. The asuras and to some extent human beings are somewhat in rajaguna. The rakshasas, animals, they are in the tamaguna. Now each has its own particular features. The devas, they are always very jubilant actually, because they have such tremendous material pleasures to enjoy. They are always drinking somaras. They are always in their beautiful Nandana Kanana gardens. And such pleasures are available there, in front of which the pleasures available on earth are insignificant. Such pleasures they have. So therefore, because somebody is enjoying in that way, is always jubilant. Just imagine a person here. He is given a lot of opportunity to enjoy, so he will appear jubilant. He appears to be very happy. In the human form of life in particular, there is always lamentation. Shoka, dukkha. Oh, I should not have done this. Oh, I should have done this. Oh, why this is happening to me? Oh, why that is happening to that person? Human form of life means lamentation. And then the animal form of life, full of fear. Always fearful. The animals, the birds, always looking here, there, at the slightest noise they will fly away, run away. Never a moment of peace, because some other animal will come and eat it up or kill it. So regardless of whether it is a body of a deva where one is normally in jubilation, of a human being where one is in lamentation, or an animal body where one is in fear, it is all a state of misery. Whatever kind of body we acquire is always a state of misery, samsmriti, one after the other, one after the other. We start getting these different bodies And all this is happening simply under the three modes of material nature. Depending on what mode of material starts drinking alcohol, he also starts becoming a drunkard. Now he has changed his habits. He has, by association, he has now developed, he is now shifting his control. Earlier he was under the control of sattva. Now he is under the control of raja and tama. He has transferred himself by association. All are under control. Nobody is independent here. It is only a matter of shifting your control. Under whom do you want to be controlled? So now he is shifting by association, by sangha. He is now shifting his control to tamoguna. Once he comes under the clutches of tamoguna, then he is no longer independent to act as he earlier wanted to. Then he may remember one day, oh, I was such a different person earlier. I was such a sattvic person. Now I have started drinking alcohol. I have done this. Now I want to change. I want to go back to my earlier ways. But then it is too late. He wants to go back. But then by now his association with tamoguna has become so strong that tamoguna is controlling him. So now he cannot do anything. It is very difficult for him. Unless he gets more powerful sattvic association, which pulls him there, it is not possible for him to come out of that sangha of tamoguna. So then he acts in particular ways under the influence of tamoguna, and those activities become the cause of his bondage. They bind him because they give rise to some reaction. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a very beautiful analogy for this. The analogy is of a silkworm. Do you all know how a silkworm acts? The silkworm, from its own saliva, it generates some thread. And the thread moves round and round. And what does it do with the thread? What does it do? Does anybody know? It binds itself. And it remains inside that cocoon. It is binding itself inside. Normally what happens? Then when it is sufficiently mature, it breaks through that particular shell and it comes out. But otherwise, now what they do normally in making silk, they just take that silk cocoon and they put in hot boiling water so that the worm is killed. And then they take the cocoon and then take out the silk from that, the yarn, the thread. So the question may be asked, why don't they wait till it comes out of its own? Because when the worm comes out and cuts through, then the threads get broken. So you have small, small pieces of thread. So then the value for that is lesser in the market. So then they want a continuous thread. So they are willing to kill. So therefore there is a lot of karma associated, bad karma associated with this kind of silk. So wherever there is something called ahimsa silk, where you don't kill the worms, you let them naturally come out by nature's arrangement. They will break the cocoon and come. The quality of silk that you get will be a little inferior. But doesn't matter. It is very good still, good enough for us to wear, but at least we don't have to bear any burden of sinful reaction for killing the worms wholesale. So anyway, the point is that this cocoon, it makes around itself and binds it. The silkworm has a capacity to break through the womb and come out. But the human being, also like the silkworm, by his own activities, he binds himself. So just as the silkworm is binding itself by its thread, its saliva, the living entity in this world is binding himself by his own karma. He performs activities and those activities are going to give reactions, so they bind him, bind him, bind him. They bind him so much that it is impossible for him to come out. The silkworm at least can cut and come out, but the human being cannot come out. It is impossible to come out of its own. And that is what Lord Krishna is going to discuss in the next verse. We will come to that next time. So it becomes impossible. Such a very difficult situation. Imagine, so who is to blame? Who is to blame for our bondage, our suffering? People in this world have the habit of blaming other people for their suffering. But actually, it is simply the result of our own activities. Other people are simply instruments to deliver our karma to us. So properly speaking, philosophically speaking, we cannot really blame somebody else. So in this way, the living entity is responsible for his own bondage. He acts in certain ways and he takes on different bodies and repeatedly dies. So therefore Lord Krishna is explaining here, this is how the whole world is being deluded under the three modes of material nature, tribhir gunamayir bhavir ebhi sarvamidam jagat mohitam. And because they are so deluded like this, as we have described, then Lord Krishna says, na abhijanati mam, therefore they do not know me. Since even sattva guna is a kind of bondage, it also leads to a certain kind of delusion, a certain kind of bewilderment. Therefore, even those under sattva guna, the devas, even they cannot sometimes recognize or understand who is Lord Krishna. So what to speak of those in tamoguna, rajaguna? Many times we see people nowadays saying, oh, I don't believe in Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna did this, he did that, why he did like this, this is not proper. He was just an ordinary human being. People have made him God. So people say so many things. They are bewildered by Krishna's pastimes. They do not understand his Rasa Leela. They do not understand so many activities that he has done. And these are ordinary human beings of this world who are under the clutches of Tamaguna and Rajaguna. So it is not surprising when even the devas in Swarga many times become so bewildered. The king of the devas, Indra, even he has got bewildered on several occasions. One time there was an asura and he was creating a lot of problems, Bhaumasura. He was actually the son of Lord Krishna himself in his Varaha Roop. He was a son of Varahadev and Bhumi, Mother Earth. And therefore he was called Bhauma. His name was Bhauma because his mother was Bhumi. And because he was Asura, so his name became Bhaumasura. And he was creating a lot of trouble. And the demigods requested Lord Krishna, who was staying in Dwarka at that time, to please kill this Asura. So Krishna did so. And he took Satyabhama with him to go to Amaravati. Amaravati not here in Maharashtra, but in Swarga. The capital of Indra in Swarga is called Amaravati. Amara, because the devas are called Amara. Amara means they are very, very long life. Not actually Amara, but because they have such a long life, they are called Amara. So he went there. Indra was very happy. He praised and glorified Lord Krishna like anything. He gave him many gifts and so on. And then as Lord Krishna departed and as they were passing by, then they saw the Parijat tree in the garden of Indra's palace. Now earlier, Krishna had gifted one Parijat flower to Rukmini in Dwarka, and Satyabhama Devi had seen this. So now she wanted the whole tree for herself. So Krishna simply lifted that tree. Krishna can do anything. Instead of taking one flower, he said, why one flower? Let's take the whole tree. So he took away the whole tree. And at that time, Indra and other devas saw, oh, our Parijat, the tree is going. And he actually tried to obstruct Krishna and he even fought with Krishna. There was a battle. Finally, Krishna taught him a lesson. But just imagine, just now he has pleaded with Krishna. Krishna has done such a great favor to him. He has killed that Asura. And Indra has glorified Krishna, but when it came to taking away the Parijat Vriksha, the tree, he became so bewildered. He suddenly forgot because he was so much attached to his opulences and his enjoyment. Similarly, when Indra saw that the residents of Vrindavan were going to offer a sacrifice to him, he became pleased. And when this boy Krishna, 7-year-old boy, he stopped all the Brajabasis from offering the sacrifice to Indra. And he told them that you offer the sacrifice to Govardhan Hill instead. Then Indra became very, very angry. He did not understand who was this small boy, 7-year-old small boy. He was thinking this is just a talkative little old 7-year-old boy. And he thinks that he is very intelligent. So Indra began to criticize Lord Krishna. And finally he let loose heavy rainfall that is normally reserved for the time of the destruction of the universe. But Lord Krishna, as you all know, lifted the Govardhan hill in a little finger of his left hand and protected all the residents of Vrindavan from the torrential downpour sent by Indra in his great anger and pride. And then Krishna, having tamed Indra's pride, mana bhanga, then Indra came to his senses and he came to offer his apologies. He was very afraid now. Though I could not recognize, what did I do? And so he came and offered his prayers, his respects to Krishna. So we can see that even someone like Indra, who is the king of the devas, who is supposed to be in sattva guna, he also gets bewildered. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Name vidu suragana prabhavam na maharshaya aham adhari devanam maharshinam cha sarvashaha. He says that nobody knows me. I know everybody. Name viduhu suragana prabhavam cha maharshayah. So the maharishis, the suras or the devas, they don't know me. Name viduhu. But I know everyone. So when the devas, when the great sages staying in the higher planetary systems, even they have so much difficulty in understanding Krishna, they are bewildered. What to speak of those who are under Rajagun and Tamagun? How can they possibly understand? They will also get bewildered. This is the influence of the three modes. Whether it is Sattvagun, Rajagun or Tamagun, one becomes bewildered. And even in Sattvagun, one may not be able to understand Krishna completely. There are many Sattvic people who will not take to Bhakti. They are very nice people, very charitable, very pleasant. They are detached, want to live a very simple life. So many qualities of the Sattvaguna are there in them. But the spiritual element is not there. They may even be atheistic actually, but have some Sattvic traits in them. Of course, atheism is not a Sattvic philosophy. But nevertheless, they have many Sattvic traits in them. And generally you will find that person to be very pleasant, very nice, everything. But no faith in God. So therefore, Sattvaguna in and out of itself is not something spiritual. Therefore, when one comes to Krishna consciousness, one comes to the point of serving Krishna, loving Krishna, surrendering to Krishna, that is spiritual. Then one is situated beyond the three modes of material nature. Till that time, one cannot understand Krishna, even if one is under Sattvaguna, unless one has touch with the spiritual energy which is even beyond the Sattvaguna. And then Lord Krishna says here, Mam ebhyaha param avyayam na abhijanati. People do not know my transcendental spiritual nature. I am param. I am beyond the three modes. I am avyaya. I am inexhaustible, imperishable, eternal. But people themselves are under the three modes of nature, and therefore they think that I am under the three modes of material nature. Because they are captivated by the three modes, they think that Krishna is also captivated. There is a certain class of people existing very much today who claim that Krishna is in hell. You have heard this? There are many people today who claim like this. In fact, there is a whole class of religious class today that according to their philosophy, they claim that Krishna is in hell. And why do they say Krishna is in hell? They say it in all seriousness. They say it because they say Krishna did so many bad karmas. From Mahabharata, if you see, he did this, he did that. Therefore, as a result of karma, he actually is in hell now. He is paying the price for his karma. But they don't understand a simple fact that karma is a law of nature. Nature is not independent. It is Krishna's nature. These laws of karma have been created by Krishna. Krishna is not under the control of this karma. So first of all, because they do not understand Krishna as param and avyayam, that he is transcendental, they think that he is also just like one of us who are under the clutches of the three modes. So they think that he is subject to the law of karma. That if Krishna has done something that appears to be immoral to us, to our ordinary vision, then according to the normal laws of karma, they apply that to Krishna also. Now see, yes, Krishna, because of he did this, therefore Krishna must be in this particular hell. So because of this ignorance, they do not understand that Krishna is never under the clutches of nature. Even when Krishna performs various activities that appear to be activities under the three modes, they are not so. For example, when someone is engaging in a war, generally that is the mode of Raja, Rajagun. So when Krishna was killing many asuras in Vrindavan and Dwarka and other places, we may think that he was acting in the mode of passion. But actually that is not so. The mode of passion was far away. It can never touch Krishna. He is always spiritual. Similarly, when Krishna is sleeping, sleeping normally is an activity in Tamogun. So we may think Krishna is under Tamogun. So although Krishna is sleeping, but he is not under Tamogun. He is still fully conscious even though he is fast asleep. Because he is totally transcendental. Even when Krishna is doing some austerity or tapasya, it's not that he is under Sattva Guna. He is always under in the spiritual position. So in this verse then, Krishna is explaining that the reason why people do not see me everywhere, although I am everywhere, is that the three modes of material nature are actually covering their eyes. People generally are bewildered by these three modes, and therefore they think that I am also under the three modes of nature, and therefore their suffering goes on. And how to come out of it? What is the solution to this? Lord Krishna will be giving in the next verse, which we will discuss tomorrow. Are there any questions? Yes. Mic, right? I think there is no mic, you may just influence. And fighting is not an activity in Sattva Guna. So what made Indra fight with Krishna? Actually, none of these modes of nature exist in the material world in purity. As we mentioned in the lecture, that there is nobody who is 100% under Sattva Guna. There is always a mixture. So even those who are actually Sattvic or under Sattva Guna, we mean that they are predominantly or largely under Sattva Guna. But there is also an element of Raja and Tama there. Indra also has some pride, which is not a quality of Sattva Guna. He is always attached to his position as the king of the Devas. That is not a Sattvic trait. He likes his pleasures of life. He is attached to them. It's not so much a Sattvic trait. But by and large, predominantly the mode that is powerful there is Sattva Guna. So therefore, because of this mix, he sometimes acts in this way. Other devas may also sometimes act according to their particular natures. And when the asuras, they attack the suras, then the suras are bound to defend themselves. They are forced to defend themselves. There is always a battle between the suras and the asuras. So the suras are also forced to act accordingly. Any other questions? Yes. The reason Sattva Guna, Raja Guna are a mixture. Well, just by so many characteristics it is easy to see. Just by the way a person behaves, way a person talks, way a person is living. By all these different ways, it is possible to understand. Although we cannot make some computer analysis, give some accurate statements, but we can just get a picture, some kind of idea we can get. For example, when you see somebody who is very fond of intoxication, you can understand he is a tamasic person. He is always intoxicated, tamasic person. Someone who is very passionate, he wants money, 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 more money, wants more and more enjoyment. You can understand he is predominantly rajasic. So by general characteristics, we can get some indication. Any other question? Yes. Foodstuffs that are juicy, fresh, nourishing, nutritious, that do not involve violence, they are sattvic foods, like grains, fruits, vegetables, milk, milk products, and so on. Foods that are spicy, that are rich, which stimulate passions, are rajasic foods. So it could be vegetarian food, but if it is very spicy, very oily, very rich, then it is also considered rajasic. Tamasic means that which is unclean, which is stale, which is the product of violence, that is tamasic. Like, non-vegetarian is tamasic. Why? Not only is it a product of violence, but it is also stale food. Because the animal is killed long before, and then they preserve it and do so many things, and then by the time it comes to the dining table, so much time has already passed. It is stale food. It is a product of violence also. It is unclean because we are eating a dead body actually. So these are the three different foods and the effects they have. Eating sattvic foods, it opens the gates of knowledge. One becomes situated in knowledge, real knowledge. One becomes peaceful. It is very conducive to control of the mind and senses. It is good for health. Rajasic foods, on the other hand, they stimulate passions, they increase one's material desires, they agitate the mind, and also they may cause disease. They are not good for health also, neither good for the physical body, nor they are good for the mind. They also cause impurities in the mind. Tamasic foods, they are positively unclean, therefore they simply cause disease. They are unclean and they degrade the consciousness very, very much. So a person who is taking alcohol, for example, this is a tamasic food, you can see how his consciousness is degraded. And a person who eats products of violence also becomes violent. Somebody was telling me just a few days ago also that there was a survey done in Bombay or somewhere, I think in Bombay, and they interviewed all the people who were criminals, who had been arrested for various violent crimes, and they found that basically almost 98 to 99% of them were all non-vegetarians. It is not that a vegetarian will not perform crimes, he may also do. But if that same person were to start eating non-veg, then he would do more crimes. So therefore food is a very, very important element of developing a spiritual consciousness. If we want to succeed in our spiritual life, which should be the goal of every human being, then our ahar or food must be sattvic. Then our mind becomes pure. Ahara shuddhau sattva shuddhihi, sattva shuddhau dhruva smritihi. When the food is pure, then our existence becomes pure. When the existence is pure, then our memory becomes pure. And then automatically we start moving on the path of spiritual life. The question is that those under the three modes of nature cannot see Krishna, but sometimes in the Swarga Loka, the Devas, they see the various forms of the Lord, because the Lord comes and resides amongst them. It is not only Deva Loka. Even on Prithvi Loka, the Lord comes as an incarnation and he lives amongst the common people as if he is one of them. When he came as Lord Ram, for example, he travelled all over the Bharatvarsha. He went all the way to Lanka, common people also saw him. As Krishna also, he travelled everywhere, common people saw him. Even sinful people like Duryodhan saw him, who were very rajasic. So this is the Lord's mercy. Even though people as such are not qualified to see the Lord everywhere, but out of his mercy on these fallen conditioned souls, he himself descends and gives his darshan to everybody, and those who are fortunate, they accept that good association and they make progress in their spiritual life. Those who are unfortunate like Duryodhan, even by physically seeing the Lord in front of him, he did not make any progress. Yes. Milk is not an animal product. It is coming from an animal, but it is not a product of violence. When we mean animal product, we mean that which involves some violence, that which involves some kind of tamasic activity. But in milk, it is pure. It is purely sattvic. In fact, milk is one of the best examples of sattvic food. The milk is a natural product of the cow. It is not done by force. It is automatically coming when the cow has a calf. And the calf cannot drink all the milk of the cow. So by God's arrangement, the balanced milk is meant for the human being. It is meant to nourish the human being physically and spiritually, mentally also. Physically, mentally, spiritually, always, milk is the best foodstuff for human beings, the milk of the cow. So because there is no violence involved here, it is not at all considered objectionable, even though it is coming from an animal. How is it that the three modes, which are inert, are acting on conscious living entities? Yes, that is a good question. Because behind these inert modes, there is Krishna, spiritual energy. The modes cannot act by themselves. It is only because Krishna is there directing them that this happens. I will circulate this picture. You can all see this picture here, which shows three people here, or two people down here. They are working very hard, representing the human beings. Toiling hard, just as everyone in this material world is toiling very hard. And above are the three ladies representing the three gunas, just some kind of pictorial representation. And they are like puppeteers, and these two men are like puppets. So the three gunas are like puppeteers, and the living entities in this world are like puppets in the hands of the three gunas. So with their fingers they are manipulating. But above the three gunas, there is Krishna. So Krishna is controlling the three gunas. And the three gunas are controlling the conditioned entities in this world. So now we will have darshan and kirtan. Please remember that Janmashtami, a very, very important festival, the most important festival of the year, is coming up. Our main celebration is on 7th, please remember. That is Tuesday. But also we will be having darshans right till 12 o'clock at night on 6th, because many people also celebrate on 6th. And on 8th, the day after our Janmashtami here, we are celebrating the 108th birthday or appearance day of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of ISKCON. That will be in the morning, going on till the afternoon, starting at 10:30. So you are all invited to come, along with your friends, relatives and others, acquaintances. Please come and take benefit of this wonderful spiritual festival that will take place now. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. See the notice over there.